Welcome back, everybody. Today is chapter 8, We Capture a Flag. The next few days, I settled into a routine that almost felt normal. If you don't count the fact that I was getting lessons from satyrs, nymphs, and a centaur. Each morning, I took ancient Greek with Annabeth, and we talked about gods and goddesses in the present tense, which was kind of weird. I discovered Annabeth was right about my dyslexia. Ancient Greek wasn't that hard for me to read. At least, no harder than English. After a couple of mornings, I could stumble through a few lines of Homer without too much of a headache. The rest of the day, I rotated through outdoor activities, looking for something I was good at. Chiron tried to teach me archery, but we found out pretty quickly I wasn't any good with a bow and arrow. He didn't complain even when he had to snag a stray arrow out of his tail. Foot racing? No good either. The wood nymph instructors left me in the dust. They told me not to worry about it. They had centuries of practice running away from lovesick gods, but still, it was a little humiliating to be slower than a tree. And wrestling? Forget it. Each time I got on the mat, Clarisse would pulverize me. There's more where that came from, punk, she'd mumble in my ear. The only thing I really excelled at was canoeing, and that was not the kind of heroic skill people expected to see from a kid who had beaten the Minotaur. I knew the senior campers and counselors were watching me, trying to decide who my dad was, but they weren't having an easy time of it. I wasn't as strong as the Ares kids, or as good at archery as the Apollo kids. I didn't have Hephaestus skill with metalwork, or God forbid, Dionysus way with vine plants. Luke told me I might be a child of Hermes, a kind of jack of all trades, master of none. But I got the feeling he was just trying to make me feel better. He really didn't know what to make of me either. Despite all that, I liked camp. I got used to the morning fog on the beach, the smell of hot strawberry fields in the afternoon, even the weird noise of monsters in the woods at night. I could eat dinner with Cabin 11, scrape part of my meal into the fire, and try to feel some connection to my real dad. Nothing came, just the warm feeling I always had, like the memory of his smile. I tried not to think too much about my mom, but I kept wondering, if gods and monsters were real, if all those magical stuff was possible, surely there's a way to save her, to bring her back. I started to understand Luke's bitterness and how he seemed to resent his father, Hermes. So, okay, maybe gods had important things to do, and couldn't they call once in a while, or thunder, or something? Dionysus could make Diet Coke appear out of thin air. Why couldn't my dad, whoever he was, make a phone appear? Thursday afternoon, 3 days after I arrived at Camp Half-Blood, I had my first sword fighting lesson. Everybody from Cabin 11 gathered in the big circular area where Luke would be our instructor. We started with basic stabbing and slashing, using some straw-stuffed dummies in Greek armor. I guess I did okay, but at least I understood what I was supposed to do, and my reflexes were good. The problem was I couldn't find a blade that felt right in my hands. Either they were too heavy, or too light, or too long. Luke tried his best to fix me up, but he agreed that none of the practice blades seemed to work for me. We were moved on to dueling in pairs. Luke announced he would be my partner since this was my first time. Good luck, one of the campers told me. Luke's the best swordsman in the last 300 years. Maybe he'll go easy on me, I said. The camper snorted. Luke showed me thrusts and parries and shield blocks the hard way. With each swipe, I got a little bladdered and bruised. Keep your guard up, Percy, he'd say, and then whap me in the side of the ribs with the flat of his blade. No, not that far up. Whap. Lunge. Whap. Now back. Whap. By the time he called a break, I was soaked in sweat. Everyone swarmed the drink coolers. Luke poured ice water over on his head, which looked like such a good idea. I did the same. Instantly, I felt better. Strength surged back into my arms. The sword didn't feel so awkward. Okay, everybody. Circle up. If Percy doesn't mind, I want to give you a little demo. Great, I thought. Let's all watch Percy get pounded. The Hermes guys gathered around. They were suppressing smiles. I figured they'd been in my shoes before and couldn't wait to see how Luke used me for a punching bag. He told everyone he was going to demonstrate a disarming technique. How to twist the enemy's blade with the flat of your own sword, so that he had no choice but to drop his sword weapon. This is difficult, he stressed. I had it used against me. No laughing at Percy now. Most swordsmen have to work years to master this technique. He demonstrated the move on me in slow motion. Sure enough, the sword clattered out of my hand. Now, in real time, he said. After I retrieve my weapon, we'll keep sparring until one of us pulls it off. Ready, Percy? I nodded, and Luke came after me. Somehow I kept him from getting a shot at the hilt of my sword. My senses opened up. I saw his attacks coming. I countered. I stepped forward and tried to a thrust of my own. Luke deflected it easily, but I saw a change in his eyes. His face narrowed, and he started to press me with much more force. The sword grew heavy in my hand. The balance wasn't right. I knew it was only a matter of seconds before Luke took me down, so I figured, what the heck? I tried the disarming maneuver. My blade hit the base of Luke's and twisted and pulled my full weight into a downward thrust. Clang! Luke's sword rattled against the stone. The tip of my blade was an inch from his undefended chest. The other campers were silent. Sorry? For a moment, Luke was too stunned to speak. Sorry! His scarred face broke into a grin. By the gods, Percy! Why are you so mean? Show me that again! I didn't want to. The short burst of manic energy had completely abandoned me, but Luke insisted. This time, there was no contest. The moment our swords connected, Luke hit my hilt and sent my weapon skidding across the floor. After a long pause, someone in the audience said, "Beginner's luck?" Luke wiped the sweat off his brow. He praised me with an entirely new interest. "Maybe," he said. "But I wonder what Percy could do with a balanced sword." Friday afternoon, I was sitting with Grover at the lake resting from the near-death experience on the climbing wall. Grover had scrambled up the top like a mountain goat. But the lava had almost gotten me. My shirt had smoking holes in it. The hair had been singed off my forearms. We sat on the pier watching the naiads down underwater, basket weaving, until I got the nerve to ask Grover how his conversation had gone with Mr. D. His face turned a sickly shade of yellow. "Fine," he said. Just great. Your career is still on track?" He glanced at me nervously. "Sharon told you I want to be a searcher's license?" "Well, no, I had no idea what a searcher's license was, but I didn't seem like the right time to ask. He just said you had big plans, you know, that you needed credit for completing a keeper's assignment. So did you get it?" Grover looked down at the naiads. Mr. D suspended judgment. He said I hadn't failed or succeeded with you yet, so our fates were still tied together. If you got a quest and I went along to protect you, and we both came back alive, then maybe he'd consider the job complete. My spirits lifted. "Well, that's not so bad, right?" He might as well have transferred me into stable cleaning duty. The chances of you getting a quest, and even if you did, why would you take me along? "Of course I want you along." Grover stared gloomily into the water. Basket weaving. Maybe it'd be nice to have a useful skill. I tried to reassure him that he had a lot of talents, but we talked about canoeing and sword playing for a while instead, then debated the pros and cons of different gods. Finally, I asked him about the four empty cabins. "Number 8, the silver one, belongs to Artemis," he said. "She vowed to be a maiden forever, so of course, no kids. The cabin, you know, honorary, so she doesn't get mad." "Yeah, okay, but the other three? The ones at the end, are those the big three?" Grover tensed. We were getting close to a touchy subject. "No, one of them, number 2, is Hera," he said. "That's another honorary thing. She's the goddess of marriage, so of course she wouldn't go around having affairs with mortals. That's her husband's job. When we say the big three, I mean the three powerful brothers, the sons of Cronus, Zeus, Poseidon, and Hades." "Right. You know, after a great battle with the Titans, they took over the world from their dad and drew lots to decide who got what. Zeus got the sky, I remember. Poseidon got the sea, and Hades the underworld." "Uh-huh. But Hades doesn't have a cabin here." "No. He doesn't have a throne on Olympus either. He sort of does his own thing down in the underworld. If he did have a cabin here..." Grover shuddered. "Well, it wouldn't be pleasant. Let's leave it at that. But Zeus and Poseidon, they both had like a bazillion kids in the myth. Why are their cabins empty?" Grover shifted in his shoes uncomfortably. "About 60 years ago, after World War II, the Big Three agreed that they wouldn't sire any more heroes. Their children were just too powerful. They were affecting the course of human events too much, causing too much carnage. World War II, you know, that basically fight between the sons of Zeus and Poseidon on one side and the sons of Hades on the other. The winning side, Zeus and Poseidon, made Hades swear on an oath with them, no more affairs with the mortal women. They all swore on the river Styx. Thunder boomed. I said, "That's the most serious oath you make can take." Grover nodded, and the brothers kept their word. No kids. Grover's face darkened. 17 years ago, Zeus fell off the wagon. There was this TV starlet with big, fluffy 80s hairdo. He just couldn't help himself. When their child was born, a little girl named Thalia. Well, the River Styx is a serious promise about promises. Zeus found himself, got off easy because he's immortal, but he brought a terrible fate on his daughter. But that isn't fair. It wasn't the little girl's fault. Grover hesitated. Percy, children of the Big Three have powers greater than any other half-bloods. They have strong aura, a scent that attracts monsters. When Hades found out about the girl, he wasn't too happy about Zeus breaking his oath. Hades sent the worst monsters out of Tartarus to torment Thalia. A satyr was assigned to be her keeper when she was 12, but there was nothing he could do. He tried to escort her here with a couple of other half-bloods she'd befriended. They almost made it. They got all the way to the top of the hill. He pointed across the valley to the pine tree where I'd fought the Minotaur. All three kindly ones were after them, along with a horde of hellhounds. They were about to be overrun when Thalia told the satyr to take the other two half-bloods to safety while she held off the monsters. She was wounded and tired and didn't want to live like a hunted animal. The satyr didn't want to leave her, but he couldn't change her mind. He had to protect the others, so Thalia made her final stand alone at the top of the hill. As she died, Zeus took pity on her. He turned her into a pine tree. Her spirit still keeps protected the borders of the valley. That's why the hill is called Half-Blood Hill. I stared at the pine tree in the distance. The story made me feel hollow and guilty, too. A girl my age had sacrificed herself to save her friends. She had faced a whole army of monsters. Next to that, my victory over a Minotaur didn't seem like much. I wondered if it was I'd acted differently. Can I have saved my mother? Grover, I said, have heroes really gone on quests to the underworld? Sometimes, he said. Ophirius, Hercules, Houdini. Have they ever returned somebody from the dead? No, never. Ophirius came close. Percy, you're not seriously thinking. No, I lied. I'm just wondering. So, a satyr is always assigned to guard a demigod? Grover studied me warily. I hadn't persuaded him that far. I'd really dropped the underworld idea. Not always. We go undercover a lot. To a lot of schools. We try to sniff out half-bloods who have making of great heroes. We find one with a strong aura, like a child of the Big Three, we alert Chiron. He tried to keep an eye on them since they had could cause really huge problems. And you found me. Chiron said you thought I might be something special. Grover looked as if he had just let him into a trap. I didn't. Oh, listen, don't think like that. If you were, you know, you'd never ever be allowed a quest. I'd never get my license. You're probably a child of Hermes, or maybe even one of the minor gods, like Nemenus, the god of revenge. Don't worry, okay? I got the idea he was reassuring himself more than me. The night after dinner, there was a lot more excitement than usual. At last, it was time for capture the flag. When the plates were cleared away, the conch horn sounded, and we all stood at our tables. Campers yelled and cheered as Annabeth and two of her siblings ran into the pavilion carrying a silk banner. It was about 10 feet long, glistening gray with a paint of a brown owl above an olive tree. From the opposite side of the pavilion, Clarisse and her buddies ran in with another banner, an identical size but gaudy red, painted with bloody spear and a boar head. I turned to Luke and yelled over the noise, "Those are the flags? Yeah, Ares and Athena always lead the team." "Not always," he said, "but often." So if another cabin captures it, what do? Repaint the flag? He grinned. You'll see. First, we have to get one. Which side are we on? He gave me a sly look, as if he knew something I didn't. The scar on his face made him look almost evil in the torchlight. We made a temporary alliance with Athena. Tonight, we get the flag for Ares. And you are going to help. The teams were announced. Athena had made an alliance with Apollo and Hermes, the two biggest cabins. Apparently, privileges had been traded, shower times, chore schedules, the best slots for activities in order to win support. Ares had allied themselves with everybody else, Dionysus, Demeter, Aphrodite, and Hephaestus. From what I'd seen, the Dionysus kids were actually good athletes, but there were only two of them. Demeter's kids had the edge with natural skill and outdoor stuff, but they weren't very aggressive. Aphrodite's sons and daughters, I wasn't too worried about. They mostly sat out every activity and checked their reflections in the lake and did their hair and gossiped. Hephaestus' kids weren't pretty, and there were only four of them, but they were big and burly from working in the metal shop all day. They might be a problem. That, of course, left Ares' cabin, a dozen of the biggest, ugliest, meanest kids on Long Island and anywhere else on the planet. Chiron hammered his hooves on the marble. Heroes, he announced. You know the rules. The creek is the boundary line. The entire forest is fair game. All magic items are allowed. The banner must permanently displayed and have no more than two guards. Prisoners may be disarmed and may not be bounded or gagged. No killing or maiming is allowed. I will serve as referee and battlefield medic. Arm yourselves. He spread his hands, and tables were suddenly covered with equipment. Helmets, bronze swords, spears, Orphic shields coated in metal. Whoa, I said. We're really supposed to use these? Luke looked at me if I were crazy. Unless you want to get screwed by your friends in cabin 5. Here, Chiron thought this would fit. You'll be on border patrol. My shield was the size of the NBA backboard, with a big caddis in the middle. It weighed about 1,000,000 pounds. I could have had snowboards on it, but it's fine. But it helped. Nobody seriously expected me to run fast. My helmet, like all helmets on Athena's side, had a blue horsehair plum on the top. Ares and their allies had red plums. Annabeth yelled, Blue team, forward! We cheered and shook our swords and followed her down the path to the south woods. The red team yelled and taunted at us as they headed towards the north. I managed to catch up with Annabeth without tripping over my equipment. Hey! She kept marching. So what's the plan? Got any magical items you can loan me? Her hands drifted towards her pocket as if she were afraid I'd stolen something. I just watched Clarissa's spear. You don't want that thing to touch you. Otherwise, don't worry. We'll take the banner from Ares. Have Luke give you your job? Border patrol. Whatever that means. It's okay. It's easy. Stand by the creep. Keep the reds away. Leave the rest to me. Athena always has a plan. She pushed ahead, leaving me in the dust. Okay, I mumbled. Glad you want me on your team. It was a warm, sticky night. The woods were dark with fireflies popping in and out of view. Annabeth stationed me next to a little creek that gurgled over the rocks, and then she and the rest of the team scattered into the trees. Standing alone with my big blue feathered helmet and my huge shield, I felt like an idiot. The bronze sword, like all the other swords I tried so far, seemed balanced wrong. The leather grip pulled on the hand like a bowling ball. There was no way anyone who actually attacked me, could they? I mean, Olympus had the liability issues, right? Far away, the conch horn blew. I heard whoops and yells in the woods, the clanking of metal kids fighting. A blue pummeled ally from Apollo raced past me like a deer leaping through the creek and disappeared into the enemy territory. Great, I thought. I'm missing all the fun, as usual. I heard a sound that sent chills up my spine, a low canine growl somewhere close by. I raised my shield instinctively. I had the feeling something was stalking me. Then the growling stopped. I felt the presence retreating. On the other side of the creek, the underbrush exploded. Five Ares warriors came yelling, screaming out of the dark. Cream the punk! Clarissa screamed. Her big, ugly pig eyes glared through the slits of her helmet. She brandished a 5-foot-long spear. Its barbed metal tip flickered with red light. Her siblings had only standard bronze swords. Not that they made me feel any better. They charged across the stream. There was no help in sight. I could run, or I could defend myself against half the Ares cabin. I managed to sidestep the first kid's swing, but these kids were not as stupid as a minotaur. They surrounded me. Clarissa thrust at me with her spear. My shield deflected the point, but I felt a painful tingling all over my body. My hair stood up on end. My shield felt numb. The air burned. Electricity. Her stupid spear was electric. I flew back. Another Ares kid slammed at me in the chest with the butt of his sword, and I hit the ground. They could have kicked me into jelly, but they were too busy laughing. Give him a haircut, Clarice said. Grab his hair. I managed to get to my feet. I raised my sword, but Clarice slammed it aside with her spear as sparks flew. Now both my hands felt numb. Oh, wow, Clarice said. I'm scared of this guy. Really scared. The flag is that way, I told her. I wanted to sound angry, but I was afraid it didn't come out that way. Yeah, one of her siblings says, but we see, we don't care about the flag. We care about a guy who made our cabin look stupid. You know that without my help, I told them. It probably wasn't the smartest thing to say. Two of them came at me, back up towards the creek, tried to raise my shield, but Clarice was too fast. Her spear struck me straight in the ribs. If I hadn't been wearing an armored breastplate, I would have been shish kebabbed. As it was, the electric point just about shocked my teeth out of my mouth. One of her cabin mates slashed his sword against my arm, leaving a big-sized cut. Seeing my own blood made me feel dizzy, warm and cold at the same time. No maiming, I managed to say. Oops. The guy said, guess I lost my dessert privileges. He pushed me into the creek. I landed with a splash. They all laughed. I figured as soon as they were through being amused, I would die. And then something happened. The water seemed to wake up my senses, as if it had been a bag of my mom's double express jelly beans. Clarice and her cabin mates came into the creek to get me, but I stood to meet them. I knew what to do. I swung the flat of my sword against the first guy's head and knocked his helmet clean off. I knocked him so hard I could see his eyes vibrate as he crumpled into the water. Ugly number two and ugly number three came at me. I slammed one in the face with a shield and used my sword to shear off the other guy's horsehair plum. Both of them backed up quickly. Number four didn't look really anxious to attack, but Clarice kept coming, the point of her spear crackling with energy. As soon as she thrusted, I caught the shaft between the edge of my shield and its sword, and I snapped it like it was a twig. Ah! She screamed, you idiot! You corpse-breathing worm! She probably would have said worse, but I smacked her between the eyes with the butt of my sword and sent her stumbling backwards out of the creek. Then I heard yelling, elated screaming, and I saw Luke racing towards the boundary line with a red team banner lifted high. And he was flanked by a couple of Hermes guys, covered his retreat, and a few old followers behind them, fighting off the Hephaestus kids. The Ares folks got up, and Clarice muttered a dazed curse. A trick! She said, it was a trick! They staggered after Luke, but it was too late. Everyone converged on the creek as Luke ran across into friendly territory. Our side exploded into cheers. The red banner shimmered and turned to silver. The Boron spear was replaced by a huge catalyst, the symbol of Cabin 11. Everybody on the blue team picked up Luke and started carrying him across their shoulders. Chiron countered out from the woods and blew the conch shell. The game was over. We'd won. I was about to join the celebration when Annabeth's voice, right next to me in the creek, said, not bad, hero. I looked. She wasn't there. What the heck did you learn to fight like that? She asked. The air shimmered, and she materialized, holding a Yankee baseball cap as if she'd just taken it off her head. I felt myself getting angry. I wasn't even fazed by the fact that she'd been invisible. You set me up, I said. You put me here because you knew Clarice would come after me, while you sent Luke after the round the flank. You had it all figured out. Annabeth shrugged. I told you. Athena always, always has a plan. A plan to get me pulverized? I came as fast as I could. I was about to jump in, but, she shrugged, you didn't need my help. Then she noticed my wounded arm. How did you get that? Sword cut, I said. What do you think? No, it was a sword cut. Look at it. The blood was gone. Where the huge cut had been, there was a long white scratch. Even that was fading. As I watched, it turned into a small scar and disappeared. I don't get it, I said. Annabeth was thinking hard. I could almost see the gears turning. She looked at my feet and then Clarice's broken spear and said, step out of the water, Percy. What? Just do it. I came out of the creek and immediately felt bone tired. My arms started to get numb again. My adrenaline rush left me. I almost fell over, but Annabeth steadied me. On Stice, she cursed. This is not good. I didn't mean want. I assumed it would be Zeus. Before I could ask what she meant, I heard the canine growl again, and it was much closer than before. A howl ripped through the forest. The campers cheer died instantly. Chiron shouted something in ancient Greek, which I would realize only later I had understood. Stand ready, my bow! Annabeth threw her sword. There on the rocks just above us was a black hound, the size of a rhino, with lava red eyes and fangs like daggers. It was looking straight at me. Nobody except Anne moved except Annabeth, who yelled, "Percy, run!" She tried to step in front of me, but the hound was too fast. It leaped over her enormous shadow with teeth. Just as it hit me, I stumbled backwards and felt the razor-sharp claws rip through my armor. There was a cascade of thwacking sounds, like 40 pieces of paper being ripped one after the other. From the hound's neck sprouted a cluster of arrows. Then the monster fell dead at my feet. By some miracle, I was still alive. I didn't want to look underneath the ruins of my shredded armor. My chest felt warm and wet, and I knew I was badly cut. Another second, and the monster would have turned me into 100 pounds of delicious meat. Chiron trotted up next to us, a bow in his hand, his face grim. "D'immortals," Annabeth said. "That's a hellhound from the field of punishment. They're not supposed to." "Someone summoned it," Chiron said. "Somebody inside the camp." Luke came over, the banner in his hand forgotten, his moment of glory gone. Clarice yelled, "It's all Percy's fault! Percy summoned it!" "Be quiet, child," Chiron told her. They looked at the body of the hellbound melt into the shadow, soaking into the ground until it disappeared. "You're wounded," Annabeth told me. "Quick, Percy, get into the water." "I'm okay." "No, you're not. Chiron, watch this." I was too tired to argue. I stepped back into the creep, and the whole camp gathered around me. Instantly, I felt better. I could feel the cuts on my chest closing up. Some of the campers gasped. "Look, I don't know why," I said, trying to apologize. "I'm sorry," but they weren't watching my wound heal. They were staring at something above my head. "Percy," Annabeth said. By the time I looked up, the sun was already fading, but I could still make out the hologram of a green light spinning and gleaming. A three-tipped spear, a trident. "Your father," Annabeth murmured. "This is really not good. It is determined," Chiron announced. All around me, campers started kneeling. Even the Ares cabin, though they didn't look happy about it. "My father," I asked, completely bewildered. "Poseidon," I asked, completely bewildered. "Poseidon," said Chiron. "Earthshaker, Stormbinder, Father of Horses, hail, Percy Jackson, son of a sea god."